I'm Paul Vanvis, the host of Curiosity Never Retires, presented by OLLI at American University. OLLI is a national network of adult education programs that provides mostly retired seniors a chance to study and teach subjects they've been interested in for years. OLLI at American University offers so many courses on so many subjects that we're producing this podcast series to tell you about some of them and help you choose which ones you'd like to take. Today, we're talking with Gregory Munford, who's going to lead us on a journey through the birth and evolution of classical music. Greg, when I was getting ready for this podcast, I had three thoughts. First, I'm going to register for this course, which I did this morning. Second, how's he going to cover all of this in just 8 weeks? And third, how are we going to discuss all this in our usual 15 to 20 minute long podcast? So with apologies in advance for all the beautiful music and fascinating history we won't have time to, let's get started. First of all, this isn't just going to be listening to one composer or a piece of music after another, is it?
That's right. The thing is that when you listen to a piece of music, some passage by Brahms or Beethoven or whatever, the reality is that you're listening to more than just the sound that you're hearing. What you're really listening to is the tip of an iceberg. And the iceberg is the literally hundreds of years of music beforehand that composers went through, that developed the language, that developed the music and the style that enabled Brahms or Beethoven to write that kind of music. And the thing is that you don't need to know that in order to enjoy music. You can just sit back and listen and enjoy the music. But to me, it's a little like watching sports because, for instance, I don't know anything about sports. And so I go to a baseball game and I'm excited when there's a home run and somebody slides into third base. But for the most part, I just kind of watch it go by. And yet when I hear people talk about baseball who know what they're talking about and know the game, or I hear like color commentary on TV, and they talk about all the strategy and the players and the history, I realize I'm sitting there, I'm missing most of the game. So music in some ways is like that, especially classical music, because it's incredibly rich and deep and detailed. And I've found over the years that the more I know, the more interesting and enjoyable it gets. My interest in music started not in classical music, but in rock and roll. And I still like rock and roll, but compared to classical music, it is a very simple music. And classical music is fairly complex and it's very deep. So I just think that the more you know and the more you learn about it, the more interesting it gets. So for this course, you're right. I want to do more than just say this composer wrote this piece and then there was this guy and then there was this guy. I want to dig into it a little bit to give, I think, some context to really sort of enlarge the idea of what we're listening to. For example, most people think of classical music as starting with Bach. If you went to the record store in the old days when they had record stores and you went to the classical section, Bach was really the first guy who was there. So we're going to start with Bach, but before we get into Bach, I want to spend some time looking at the music that led up to Bach. And that, to me, is a fascinating and interesting time where you look at starting looking at some of the medieval music and the Renaissance music. And there's some weird and fascinating and beautiful music that led up to it, all which ended up creating the language that made Bach possible. So that's what we're going to do at first. And then when we get to Bach, we're going to dig into his music and the other two main composers of the time, which is Vivaldi and Handel. So that's kind of where we're going to start.
So I'm glad you mentioned Bach, because you say that Bach is the turning point and Bach was the right genius at the right time.
What Bach did, he really was the right guy at the right time, because Bach came onto the scene almost at the exact moment that the hundreds of years of development of the musical language really clicked into place. All the pieces of the puzzle were there when he came on the scene. And the thing about Bach was that he got it like nobody else did. There are certainly other contemporaries of Bach, but Bach was able to fully understand the implications of all the aspects of this new music. So what he did is he just picked it up and ran with it in a way, and he wrote over 1,000 pieces of music. Not everyone is a masterpiece, but everyone almost is perfect. It's just this extraordinary example of how magnificent this effectively new musical language was. So we'll spend some time looking at some of the fun things he did, and interesting things he did, the counterpoint stuff where he could write backwards and upside down and overlapping themes and all the, you know, stuff that makes it sort of amazing. But more than that, we're going to spend some time listening to how just gorgeous and exciting and powerful his music was in all the different ranges and categories. And while we're there, we'll spend some time with Handel and Vivaldi, and that'll be our sort of focus on Baroque in that time. And then after Bach, it's the next generation. And that next generation of composers is interesting because they kind of rebelled against what Bach was doing, the sort of ornate and highly technical stuff. And interestingly enough, the composers that led that way were his own sons. He had four sons who were actually more famous than he was. And they evolved toward a simpler style that evolved a generation later into what then is thought to what we call the classical style. And that is the beginning of the classical period. And the two great masters of that, of course, are Haydn and Mozart, who we will look at next.
Let me go back for a second without having to pick your favorite child. Can you give us an example of some of the pieces that Bach wrote that you think were particularly important or different?
Well, the single one that jumps out immediately is a group of fugues and preludes called the Well-Tempered Clavier. And what that is, it's 24 preludes and fugues that he wrote in every key. And the reason that's important is because it exemplifies the new tuning that came about just when he was there. If you played a keyboard a generation before Bach and you started in the key of C, and you then modulated to the key of, say, F sharp, it would sound incredibly out of tune by you did that. So Bach was involved in a tuning system that enabled you to play in all the keys, which gives an enormous range. And so his Well-Tempered Clavier is a good example of the kind of thing he did that was not only just beautiful music, but also exploited the language, this new language, perfectly well. And then, of course, everything else he did. I mean, his B minor mass, I mean, he wrote cantatas, he wrote choral pieces, he wrote keyboard pieces, he wrote violin pieces, just one thing after the other. So he was a very, very busy composer.
Were there changes in the instrumentation that let him do this sort of thing?
There were, but the big changes in instrumentation really came in the next generation. He walked into the instrumentation that he used and didn't change it radically. His central instrument was the organ. And when he was young, of course, musicians back then had to do a lot of different things. And one of the things he was an organ repairman. And the story was that he would go to towns when people needed work on their organ. And if they heard that the young Johann Sebastian was coming into town, it kind of made him nervous because they knew he was going to just open up the stops and just let it rip. And as thrilling as that must have been, I think it really put the organ through its paces. So in terms of the instrumentation, there wasn't a lot that was different in his time. That really came a generation later with the evolution of the keyboard and the piano.
Okay, well, I stopped you there. You were about to tell us about the transition from the Baroque and Bach and Handel and Vivaldi to a couple of composers that even those of us who aren't that familiar with classical music probably know, Mozart and Beethoven.
Yeah, yeah.
So besides writing beautiful music, obviously, they too, like Bach, changed the form in significant ways, right?
Yeah, exactly. Haydn in particular, his story is really fun. Number one, Haydn was a charming personality. Everybody loved Haydn. They called him Papa Haydn. And he had a job at the Esterházy Palace where he had to turn out music over his lifetime. And Count Esterházy loved music, and so he put a lot of pressure on Haydn to keep coming up with stuff. So Haydn had at his fingertips a complete orchestra, an opera, all the instruments he wanted, and it was just up to him to keep developing. And fortunately for us, what that led to was he literally invented, you think of him as the father of the symphony and the father of the string quartet. And you can hear that in his music starting out in a very simple form. And by the time he finished, he wrote 104 symphonies. And it's a fun thing to do to listen to how simple they were at the beginning and how enormous and complex they were at the end. So he really developed the classical style. Mozart, who was somewhat younger, wasn't the inventor that Haydn was, but you might think of him as somebody who perfected the style. And so Mozart walked in and then picked up this new style, this new classical style, and wrote absolutely extraordinarily perfect pieces of music, to the point to which, in their generation, by the time Haydn and Mozart had ended their careers, there was a sense in which they had written music that could never be surpassed. You could never have music better than this. Of course, that's before Beethoven walked into the scene.
Tell us about that. I mean, that almost sounds like a movie.
No, it is. It's very cool. Well, Beethoven, as I say, there was a sense in Vienna that you could never have music better than Haydn and Mozart. Mm-hmm. So Beethoven shows up. And in the first part of his career, in the early Beethoven, he writes music that's kind of in their style, even though it kind of pushes the boundaries. But in his middle period, and he goes through some emotional things that are very interesting and very powerful, and to hear about it, that's very dramatic. But in his middle period, he breaks loose. And he begins to bend the rules and break the rules of the beautifully balanced and formed classical music that he inherited. And what he does is he brings a level of emotion into music that had never been heard before, and personal emotion. And that was, in some ways, shocking. It was disturbing. He got a lot of pushback on it, but it changed the character of music forever and what our expectations were. So Beethoven just exploded the world of music. And luckily, he wasn't just crazy. He was also a genius. So the music is incredibly powerful. But it's also incredibly beautiful. And as I say, it raised the standard in a way that the next generation after him, they dealt with that legacy forever.
And did they also feel, as they had at the end of Bach's period, that, well, nobody's going to top this?
Well, yes and no. As a matter of fact, the best example of that is Richard Wagner. And what Wagner said was, he said, after the Ninth Symphony, you can't write another symphony. He said, it's over. Instrumental music is done. And as a consequence, Wagner decided not to write instrumental music. He wrote operas, and that's the reason he was, because he felt Beethoven had just topped things. And he wrote very explicitly about that. The fun thing is that there are other composers who did not agree. And so what you have after the generation of Beethoven is something called the War of the Romantics. And you've got the guys on the Wagner side who line up with Wagner and Liszt and Bruckner, of saying, no, we've got to go in some radical different direction. You've got Schumann and then Brahms and Mendelssohn on the other side saying, no, those guys have missed the point. They're going off in a totally wrong direction, and they're both claiming legacy of Beethoven. So they're both writing extraordinarily amazing music in a very different style, and each one of them are pointing the finger at the other one saying, no, but you've missed the point. Yours is, they're saying that the Wagner guys is just completely out of bounds, and they're saying that the Brahms guys are insipid and boring, and luckily for us, they've generated extraordinarily beautiful music. But it's a fun thing to hear that drama between them.
You know, there is so much more music and so many more composers to talk about, and you've already mentioned the Romantic period, and then late Romanticism, Schubert, Mendelssohn, and Liszt, and Chopin. And then in the modern era, there's Mahler, and Schoenberg, and Stravinsky, and 12-tone music. I mean, we could go on. Each one of those could be a class by themselves. We don't have time to talk about all of that, although you'll cover it in the course, I saw. Is there a summing up you'd like to do before we end today?
I think so. The thing is, after this generation after Beethoven and this War of the Romantics, classical music kind of fragmented into different areas. The very lush romanticism of Rachmaninoff into these brittle, little, tight little pieces of Schoenberg, the piano pieces, and the primitive music of Stravinsky. So it went off in a number of different directions. So we're going to look at those. Also, a strain of nationalism showed up, and so there's a Russian school, a French school, Finnish, and even an American school with guys like Barber and Copland that were writing music that was really capturing the essence of where they were from. So music broke out in a number of different areas. One of the things that I do want to touch on, this to me is kind of interesting and kind of fun, we're going to hear how three different composers all responded to World War II during the war. An English composer, a Russian composer, and a German composer. And so where the story kind of ends is we're going to look at the generation of composers that had basically said that the classical musical language and style had been exhausted. And so they felt that they needed to come up with something new. So you've got some experimental composers, guys like Varese, who used just sound instead of notes to compose. And you've got Penderecki, who wrote some very powerful music using instruments in a very weird way. And you've even got somebody like John Cage, who wrote a music called 4 minutes and 33 seconds of dead silence. And so at the end of it, you've got some experimental things. So we're going to cover a lot of ground, which means we have to skim over a lot and touch, and you know, we're going to leave most stuff behind. But I think we'll be able to touch on some of the most interesting and beautiful pieces of music. And I'd like to sum up with a statement about why I think this is important, if
Please.
That's all right. And that is, with all the terrible stuff going on in the world today, taking the time to listen to music might seem to some people kind of trivial or even irresponsible. But I really believe that it's just the opposite. We take it for granted, but the creation out of the raw material of sound, of the musical language, and the inspiring masterworks that came out of it is, to me, one of the most amazing and miraculous achievements of humankind. It's an achievement of shared beauty and vitality and craft and imagination and the capacity of the best of the human spirit. So I think that engaged listening to this music is important because it's an act of not just enjoying but actively participating in the realization of that amazing achievement. To me, it absolutely nourishes the soul and exercises and bolsters our humanity. And that serves to me as an antidote to the ugly and angry and dehumanizing grind that's so prevalent today. So, there's an expression that music is the food of love, and we are starved for love, I think, at this time. So that's why, in a nutshell, I'm hoping that whatever will come and enjoy this feast of some of the greatest music ever written.
Sounds fascinating. I can't wait for it to begin. Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Curiosity Never Retires is produced by myself, David Flaxman, Andrew Hiller, and Jesse Williams, and is presented by OLLI at American University. Our theme is education music from Background Music for Video by Pixabay. We hope you can join us again for our next look into OLLI at American University's fall offerings. For Curiosity Never Retires, I'm Paul Vanvis. Take care.